Hello and welcome to Simplified, year-end episode part 3. I am here with two.
Well done. Nice, good start.
To a good
this
start.
Is the third episode we are doing.
Yeah.
And here we are.
Here we are. And who are these we, you ask? I am Chuck, who you normally makes bad jokes.
Mm-hmm. I am Sriketh, who normally is...
Reacts badly to said bad jokes.
Reacts badly and is regurgitating Wikipedia in passive voice.
Fair enough. And that is...
I am Tony.
Who improves on the bad jokes
and,
and is filling Naren's chair quite inadequately.
Yes. We will not comment on that, but
at least in terms of age.
I just meant I have a smaller butt.
That too. Fair enough. Well, all right.
That was required to insult Naren.
We have not taken a gluteal check, so we can't say whether that is... truth or not, but in this post-truth era, who cares anyway about facts? Naren is not here because he is contributing to the economy, as he himself would say about one of us if we were to miss his recording. But we have not had a simplified episode with the three of us together for a very long time.
That is true.
Berlin. Yeah, Sriketh is in the studio today.
Hello.
Back from Malaysia.
I am far away from the mic.
What?
I was not very audible. Now I'm closer to my...
Okay,
now
cool.
I'm farther
away. Yeah, yeah. Sriketh has...
I am demonstrating adequately that I am... physically present in the IVF.
Yeah,
studio.
Yeah. All right. Fair enough. And so we are recapping the year that went by. What a magnificent year it's been for all concerned, especially depression, nationalism, and climate. And if you're a fan of climate change, then it's a great year. If you like carbon, like go carbon dioxide.
Yeah. Yes,
it's awesome because like now you can be surprised by the climate and the weather and everything.
Well done. Yeah. It's like I oppose this operation of clean air in my physical surroundings.
See, I think we should just stop being negative. We liberals, as we call ourselves, we should just accept this is how the world is going to go and try to take it for its positives. Like, now you make Delhi, for instance, the pollution thing, instead of not doing anything, crop burning, Punjab. Yeah, dude, that's last year's story. So this year, make it a competition. No, whether Delhi can actually outdo last year's pollution. Give it like medals, awards and all should be there. I feel like this is...
Yeah, pretty much it.
Huh? Or like stubble burning is... you know, in the context of trimming your beard.
Oh my God.
Wow. So let us seek relief from that by talking about, here we are taking topics out of hat, India's political landscape.
Oh my God.
Fantastic. Yeah. From one dumpster fire to another.
In case you're driving, please remember to wear your seatbelt.
And in case you're recording podcasts, please remember to be politically correct to avoid studio fires.
What do we say? So midway through the year, the BJP government came back with an overwhelming majority.
Yeah.
But we are very confused as towards the end of the year. The day before we record this, BJP lost the Jharkhand elections. And this is infographic that's doing the rounds, which is supposed to make us liberals feel happy. I'm not sure how sure it is. So BJP's vote share has fallen from 70% to 37% or something.
Before we launch into that.
It's the area of territory.
Oh, it's the area. Okay. Yeah. In India, that doesn't count for
one. One very shocking admission I need to make on Simplified... for all the ultra-crepidarianism that I claim to have, is that when BJP government got elected, I legitimately had to go online and check and realize the fact that there are no term limits in India as far as prime ministers are concerned, as far as ruling governments are concerned.
Correct.
So effectively, if he keeps getting re-elected, you could like have till the nature and biology allows him, Modi can be prime
minister.
I know
you wanted to say cows come home. They are already
they are already happened. But
to me, one of the big points, apart from how hegemonical is that the adjective I'm going for, is the BJP has been, is the absolute lack of an opposition. Now, normally I would say that the opposition is spineless, but they don't have a body itself.
Like skull in Natural History Museum.
Skull cap, as it soon will be too.
Please edit that out.
Just for my indulgence, please edit that out. Naren will leave the show. show. if that works
but,
its way.
But interestingly, like, despite the brutal majority, I mean, brutal only as a...
Yeah, yeah, normal, majority also.
As a strong adjective.
They've lost the opportunity to form the last two governments, so Jharkhand and Maharashtra. And, you know, the last time that happened is like, it's like Virat Kohli not scoring a century in like three matches or something.
Wow.
That, yeah, but basically, you know, their, you know, form government at all cost strategy seems to have finally come back and opposition's plural are finding a way around it, which is interesting because... right now, we are able to have peaceful protests in Mumbai, for instance, because of the random alliance that was formed.
Like, I think, I don't know whether this is the Kamba show that you and I had gone for recently, where I think it was when Kamba said, who would have thought that 10 years ago we'd be saying thanks to Shiv Sena, we've been able to have peaceful protests.
That's where, I mean, it's also... Quite interesting to see how, I mean, it's almost like BJP, it's almost like the ruling party has become self-aware at this point, right?
Yeah.
They have realized that how much power they can have. And I mean, it's almost like the, what the Congress enjoyed as dynastic power and exerting that over a year, over that time, BJP is finally reaching the point where they can say that, oh, we've been used to power and used to how to exert it.
Yeah.
Where, like, for example, what happened with Maharashtra was them effectively saying that, you know what? It was not, it's not a clear majority, but we're going to take it anyway.
Yeah.
We're just going to do whatever it takes to just take it. And they were denied. And that was finally where it's almost like democracy decided to like finally kick and say, I'm not so completely dead. I'm still alive.
There's a very awkward analogy with that type of, you know, governing and attitude and what the whole SoftBank way of operating startups is. Like, like we have this power, momentum, whatever. Let's just like... try to do this at whatever cost and not worrying too much about collateral damage along the way.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. And so there...
And at the end, everybody says, ayo. Ayo? Ayo? No, that didn't work.
No, not at all, Jack.
Work at all.
And overall, where... I think what the BJP, through its actions, is trying to do is almost like setting in place structures of long-term governance. Right? Like... with the bills and with the acts that are coming in and with the way they are kind of going about their entire term. And also
the way they pick other people in their party. Like, I am pretty sure Aditya Nath and Pragya Thakur, for instance, are being put in place so that Modi and Shah become sort of like the moderate face.
Exactly.
Shift the Overton window.
Yeah, exactly. Shifting the Overton window where, I mean, to think that Modi is now at the center and Aditya Nath is on the right, where Aditya Nath was like, almost right-wing terrorist at one point.
He was so right-wing, he was almost left-wing because the world was round.
It went all the way around. Yeah, but no, and that's where I think setting in place structures of long-term governance in terms of how do I make sure that not only do I make sure my current is taken care of, but how do I change the demographics of the country? How do I change the voting patterns of the country and the way the country behaves and reacts to things? In terms of not just this year, but like the next term.
This is like gerrymandering on steroids.
Yeah,
right?
Very much so. Like, just let's radically alter the nature of India so that dissent is removed over generation.
Yeah. Wow.
Right. So,
interestingly, from, you know, when we are recording on the 24th of December, despite winning 303 seats and like a wide majority, it seems like the discontent that people are feeling is finally spilling out. So if the last term was in some sense about boiling the frog, this term we've got a new home minister who's like in less than 6 months pushed multiple things through, right? Like Kashmir and, you know, NRC, NCA, and the Ayodhya verdict and everything. But right now, it seems like they have to basically shut down the internet, impose Section 144 and you know, shut all media down from reporting.
And that being an important point of how dissent is being curbed. While earlier it used to be that dissent, I mean, and those mediums are still being used of beating back protesters and stuff. The medium of how dissent is being curbed is just shut down the mediums of communication. Because if argument cannot happen, then dissent cannot either.
So it becomes really cool when China is giving you a compliment.
Compliment, right?
Yeah. How you're shutting down dissent.
Yeah. And the fact that we are the country with the maximum amount of internet shutdowns or maximum time of internet shutdowns in the world.
So, both, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, that being a big badge of honor, so to speak, that we need to carry.
And the problem is all these things act as distractions from things that are actually affecting everyday life, right? Like the economy is in pretty bad shape.
Yeah.
Despite the creative Photoshop work, despite the creative mathematics department of the government, the economy is doing pretty badly. Unemployment is not doing well. The effects of demonetization, GST are still being felt to this day. And all these things act as distractions. And even unrelated, like the auto sector is not doing whatever. The telecom industry is in pretty bad shape.
Unemployment.
I mean, there's just so many of these things happening, which, we get our, attention goes to.
Kanaya Kumar actually said this on one of the NDTV. I mean, he said it in Hindi. Yeah. I'm just going to say it in English, but you should listen to the actual clip. He said, this is basically like, as a child, you're really hungry and you go to your dad and say, Papa, give me a biscuit. And Papa picks you up and puts you on top of the almirah. Now suddenly you forget you're hungry and you're like, Papa, please
almirah put me on top. It's like, and as in the famous words of the legendary Kunal Kamra, agar jo Pakistan nahi hota, toh tu patriotic hota kya?
I want to end this section by, I know we started the section by saying there's no opposition whatsoever. See, I feel that the only possible challenger to Modi at this point of time needs to be somebody who's coming from out of politics. And this is my opinion, because I don't see the Congress, though, no chance. The other parties, sure, like Mamata Banerjee is making some noise, but she's not a national icon in the way that a Modi or even a Rahul Gandhi is, in that matter. To me, it has to come from somebody who's outside politics. And if you look at somebody who's outside politics, what are the things that India collectively loves enough to send an icon over there? Sports is one thing, but I don't see any sports person coming up, past or present, to come up to this government. Bollywood has been famously silent. There are some guys, out of peer pressure and all that, they are coming out and doing that, whatever it is. Then the other side is business, which I feel that's the only space which is which has somebody who with a spine. And to some extent, it might be very, very unfair to actually say Amitabh Bachchan should run for prime minister, because he doesn't have that sort of thing. But when you are a business person, at least you know something about how, you know, things work. I'm putting my hat and saying I think Anand Mahindra should run for prime minister, because he's retired also now. Yeah. I think he's the only guy who will also be able to command that sort of respect universally. And I don't know, I think somehow I just think he has a spine.
And complete the democracy charade and move to oligarchy.
And if there's one thing he shares with the current current government, is there his way of bulldozing everything, because he has tractors.
Literally and metaphorically.
So I think that we'll end our tiptoeing around the Indian political landscape.
Now we tiptoed. I think we fully took one plunge.
We took a plunge, but we wanted to wipe all the beads of water to show that we never were in that pool in the first place.
And we will segue quite comfortably and rapidly into another move to our other topic of climate change and activism.
Wow. Yes.
So, we referred to Greta in our first episode as the person who had the biggest net gain of fame in the last year. And with good reason, because I think there are two parts to the climate change conversation. One being the effects of climate change. It's no longer, I mean, I think the biggest change that's happened and what people are experiencing and seeing now is that climate change is no longer a problem of the future, but it's a problem right now.
Yeah.
It's happening. And people are seeing the effects of it, from the California wildfires impacting directly Hollywood and burning down their homes.
Like their homes,
famous Hollywood stars.
Huge fires in Australia as we speak.
And bushfires in Australia, which are
typhoons.
Rampant, which have caused Australia for briefly to become the most polluted place on the planet.
Yeah.
The typhoon in Japan, which I narrowly escaped personally, and was quite intense. I mean, with all the organization and the discipline and the management of Japan, still causing the deaths of about close to about 70 to 80 people.
Yeah.
to moving to the constant, and these are now regular events that we have all gotten used to. The haze in Delhi as well as the haze in Southeast Asia, where which is regularly caused by crop burning, and these things. Actually, I mean, I had first-hand experience. I have not lived in Delhi during the... I've lived properly in the haze. But for the first time, experienced the haze in Malaysia. And it was truly... It was truly worrying. Like, you can't step outside without getting breathless. You can't... Your mouth will get dry really quickly. Mm. You will breathe. And every time you breathe, you feel the pollutants in your lungs. Yeah. You have to constantly be aware of the fact that you switch on air purifiers when you get home or get inside any space. And and you can't even see, like, for example, the iconic Petronas stars in Malaysia, they at the peak of the haze went invisible. They disappeared because you couldn't see them through a distance. You couldn't see the entire, like, the largest stars in Malaysia. At one point, the tallest stars in the world.
Yeah.
You couldn't see them. So the haze, and these are things now people are getting used to. Like, people are now coping with it. The sales of masks as well as air purifiers go through the roof. Campaigns are now coming up. Of course, capitalism is reacting quite famously to all of this stuff with promoting air purifiers through the entire thing.
Which in a way kind of makes things worse also, because those things suck up electricity, which has been generating somewhere, in India being a coal-based country.
And it's also kind of bringing to light how... climate change will pan itself out in the lines of the rich will be able to insulate themselves, but who will really
suffer is the
poor traffic guy who's standing for 20 hours in the traffic in Delhi, breathing in that air every minute and probably getting lung cancer in 5 years.
Sleeping outside, slum shanties don't have air purifiers.
So that is the biggest point. So climate change is there. We're not even mentioning the zero day in South Africa where the Cape Town's run out of water. So across the world, we are seeing these effects. The funniest being in Venice. I think in Venice they were scheduled to have a meeting on to discuss the climate change effects in Venice, and they called off the meeting. They cancelled the meeting, and
I think they said there is no climate.
They called off the meeting saying it's not important. And 20 minutes later, that room got flooded because of the rising water in Venice.
Worst floods ever.
So literally, it's no longer a problem of the future. It's a problem of now. People are experiencing. People are getting impacted.
I think one thing that I have anyway observed through the year is almost every week there is a new climate change report or something, and you've sort of become inured to it in some way. If I remember, the year started with the climate the top scientists from around the world saying that if we don't fix this right now, 2040 onwards is going to see we'll move past any sort of repair, and it will be an emergency, global emergency by 2040.
Yeah.
And the thing is, while this makes the headlines and news and all that, it's still not, and this keeps happening, right? This is a thing that repeats every year. You see like so many chunks apart, glacier the size of
X country
has just chopped off from Greenland. More scientists saying, oh, yada, yada, all that. So all these things just basically point back to the same thing. They get temporary media attention or whatever it is.
It's particularly dark how the glacier cleaving in Greenland is actually drawing tourists. People are going to watch glaciers cleaving.
Yeah.
And now it's become a tourist attraction, and then that makes you just like go, wow, this is what human
One of the
about.
Things like the state of the world right now was, and just summed up for me, was how climate change has actually helped Arctic tours, because now those annoying glaciers are not in the way.
The ships can
actually go by. So anyway, it's just shocking. And now this is like about a week after the COP25 talks happened, which was supposed to be the talks, right? After the Paris talks and all that. Okay, now, guys, we really need to sit and take action, because there were flashpoints, right?
Yeah.
The Bolsonaro's fire burning in the Amazon, all these examples you just said. And on the positive side, the Greta Thunberg-inspired climate marches around the world, showing that this is not a fringe thing anymore. And even among Republican voters, there is overwhelming support for climate change action. So this is clearly something that people want as well.
Exactly.
But it's just amazing how the COP25 talks just collapsed without any sort of decision happening. Basically, the big guys saying we're going to go on polluting, just screw yourself and do whatever you want.
And that's where actually, and this is where we shift to the second part of this conversation is activism.
Yeah.
Where activism has not just, I mean, Greta Thunberg is the face of the activism, yeah, so to yeah. speak, in the of climate change in the world. But I think the overall movement being, it's the reason why it's gaining so much traction is that it's the average person who's also realized that this is the biggest conversation point and this is the biggest issue that we are facing.
Yeah.
All the other stuff is, all the xenophobia, all the other stuff is just noise
yeah.
versus what is, this is effectively, I mean, if to use a Game of Thrones reference, and I know neither of you are Game of Thrones
That's
fans
it.
Here, but this is effectively like, and they actually said that this was one of the analogies that the show was using was, in Game of Thrones, they were all fighting against each other.
Yeah.
But there was the dead that was coming in from the north.
Mm-hmm,
and the north is coming in and they all united and said, you know what, we'll call a ceasefire and we'll fight against this enemy in the north.
Yeah.
Because our wars can be fought later, but everyone will die if this is not fought. And
yeah.
the analogy that they were using was this dead, the army of the dead is what the global warming is. And is what everyone needs to be focusing on versus fighting these petty wars amongst each other.
Yeah.
But Greta, coming back to the point of what Greta Thunberg and everyone has been doing is that, is just calling it out starkly. It's
yeah.
about saying that, you know what, let's leave the sugarcoating to one side. This is a problem for now. People are dying now. There is a deadline. There is a hard deadline, a numerical deadline and a numerical number, a number of CO2 kgs in the air that cannot be passed. And that is happening at this rate. So we have a hard deadline by which we need to stop. And these things to be called out and these things to be said so clearly by especially a person of the Gen Z, which is honestly, and there was a brilliant quote that one of the climate change activists who was also a teenager in the US who made, saying that, I think I hate the fact that they call us the Gen Z, like we are the last generation that's ever going to going to have any possibility to change. We do not want to be the Gen Z. We do not want to be the last generation. We want another generation to come after us.
Wow.
And this is why we want to fight. So it's the younger people who actually are taking on the mantle because they know this is the world they're going to live in.
Yeah.
The older politicians are all going to die before yeah. any of these problems come to be. So activism on an average level being taking forms, not just in terms of protests, but in terms of like lifestyle activities, like plogging, for
yeah.
example, where people are picking up trash on the way and stuff like that, being faddish, but still something towards that
yeah.
particular thing where it's coming to the mainstream lifestyle angle of it. How,
yeah.
how do I kind of integrate environmental consciousness into my lifestyle?
Yeah. And that's the weird thing is, while capitalism has got us into this mess, strangely it seems like that might be the thing to take us out of it. Like we're seeing
much,
so
yeah.
much investment in things like alternative meats, for instance, which will hopefully cut down a lot of the beef emissions, for instance, or
yeah.
Other, like there's a lot of research for carbon sucking technologies
yeah.
for, and of course renewables by themselves. The problems, honestly, and there are several studies to show that if a city, there's a beautiful article recently, if Portland, the famously hipster city in Oregon, US, if they were to go off the coal grid and so non-renewable grid and go to entirely renewable in three parts. One is over a 10-year period, 5-year period, and immediately. They said, okay, what will the impact be? And they assessed it properly. It was a proper study. And they said, even if we shut off everything today and go renewable, it will have the maximum benefit in terms of jobs, this thing, that thing. The city will have a surplus of money if we go renewable today. It's just politics that's getting in the way, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Oh, well. So
much
for that.
There we are. So, I mean, I think there is a whether it's next year or whether it's over the years that come, over the next decade, there is a tipping point coming somewhere.
Yeah,
where
the biggest issue of the next decade
where,
is going
where
to be
climate change cannot be a thing that you can deny anymore.
Yeah.
Where it has to be something that is so obvious that you cannot deny it. And I think that's when, as a species, we will have to make a decision to start focusing on it as the number one problem of our time.
Well spake.
Yeah. But yeah, on a positive note, I think a ruling that happened literally just 4 days before we are recording in the Dutch Supreme Court, in the Supreme Court of the Netherlands, where they have actually, case was brought against the Dutch government in 2013, arguing that they have not met their carbon dioxide emission reduction goal. And so they have been fined, and there has been a tort case literally against the government, mm-hmm. and it has been upheld. So it is literally the first case of climate justice that has actually been ruled in favor of climate change on human rights. So hopefully that is a good precedent for the whole world.
Yeah.
And I think Europe is leading the way clearly.
Yeah, yeah. Europe, I mean, Europe, Northern Europe, Scandinavia, it's all
those
guys.
Yeah, they are the ones who are leading the way, and we hope that the rest of the world can at least follow. Because like you said, I think the... if you were to be completely even economics based, you would see the benefit of being pro eco friendly climate things, because there is the benefits really outweigh the flaws. Yeah. So
what's worrying though is that case had to come from the Netherlands, which you would already assume was hitting their goals. Yeah.
and speaking of moving right to our next topic that we're going to talk about from 2019 today, and that is
the word of the year, which is the pronoun they. And is a very important and interesting topic, which honestly none of us have enough information about, because it really doesn't...
Putting the disclaimer of three straight males in the studio.
Cis males.
Yes, right.
Wow, we are the...
We are the white people of India.
White people of India.
Pretty much.
So
yeah.
Basically what this is the pronoun that refers to... anyone who's gender fluid,
mm-hmm.
And basically the difference between sex and gender is that sex is what manifests physically, and gender is how you identify for yourself, right? So most of us are brought up with the idea that it's he or she, but actually a large percentage of the population identifies they, which is fluid sort of definition in terms of gender identity.
A very, very good analogy that one of my profs, Nishant Shah, had given was, he said that, when the child is born and suddenly taken in the cradle put in the cradle, they are at that point, just before anyone says anything about them, at that point they are purely just in the space of sex. Mm-hmm. They are only identified by their sex. But the moment that nurse calls out ke ladka hua hai and puts the boy in a blue blanket is when gender is assigned to them. Mm. And that's where the gender assignments begin almost. Mm. So,
No, so also basically it's a good thing that it's picked up as a word of the year, because it's about also picked up by how mainstream it's become in terms of how often people are using it. For instance, the word of the year in 2017 was feminism. and 2019 is they, which means that this is getting more mainstream attention.
Yeah.
And to be honest, like, we have very limited exposure to it, but there's a very beautiful 5-minute video which Abish has made, which I think
Abish
everyone...
Matthew, the Indian...
Oh, the link will be in the description.
Which
and
I think
also
everyone
former
should watch.
Simplified guest.
But also allied to this is the transgender bill, which was passed in India. Where again, the point being that the lack of context is readily apparent when people who don't understand these things make laws, because everyone from, most people from the transgender community objected to it.
Yeah.
And it was apparently passed on the same day as the abrogation of Article 370.
Oh
so
my God.
It's not like there was any real debate or deliberation about it.
Or just like buried in the news cycle, effectively.
Yeah. But also, like, this bill has been attempted to be passed several times, and at all points in time, the transgender community has sort of said that, you guys are not looking at it in the right angle, and our rights need to be protected.
Yeah.
Which I think we are a long way away from. So,
I mean, starting from the very first point of the fact that since it's a gender identity bill, it focuses on trans women and hijras, but there is very little emphasis on intersex, gender, queer, and even trans men. So, I mean, it's firstly understanding the definitions and how wide the net goes, and how each of these communities have their own issues and problems and struggles that they face again. So it needs to be that in much more inclusive. And of course, it comes from the drafting, right? Who is it being drafted by? Yeah, it's being drafted by other cis privileged cis men who have very little knowledge or even intention to do this to make it more inclusive. So, that becomes a massive problem, and that's where it criminalizes begging. It does so many negative things where it actually robs people of their livelihood and means of livelihood and systems that have been developed in their condition of criminality that prevents them from continuing to their way of life the way they are managing.
And also, I think the bill talks about certification as opposed to self-identification.
Exactly.
All of which are big problems. And basically, the point is, I'm going to take a guess and say most of us listening to this do not have a proper understanding of this, which is where the needle needs to change. Yeah. And hopefully, in the next year, we'll make more strides towards.
Definitely. There's one space in which there is some sort of discussion or progress.
Yeah, happening. I think this is the space where the discussion needs to become more. I think there needs to be more identification. I mean, I think it just needs to start with, while Section 377 was a big leap, big step forward, it needs to be recognized as the first step. It needs to be recognized as that this is the bare minimum. Now we need to go beyond. We cannot just rest on our laurels over there. That's not where the fight was won. It's just begun. So,
On that note,
Word of the year is they.
Yeah. Word of the year being they.
And on that slightly optimistic note, I suppose we should take a break while the going is good, because it's going to get a little worse after the break.
Jesus.
Bye. Welcome back. After the break, we are still Chuck, Shriketh and Tony here in the studio trying to simplify the year that went by for you, mostly because we don't have anything else to do. Okay, so during the break, I dug this out of the hat, and I am going to talk about China, Shriketh.
Of course.
It's been like China is like in every conversation. I think China has become that like you take any topic on the planet from climate change to politics to infrastructure to technology, you spend enough time on it and eventually you will come back to China. It's like if you like in you take any indie gig that happens in Bombay. You let people alone with enough beer for a while, eventually you will talk about zero. Like, it's something like that, I feel.
So, YouTube had this issue with their algorithm, right?
Yeah.
That if you kept playing YouTube, it would eventually play Gangnam Style. Because
so, what you're saying is
auto-playing, right?
Yeah, I think that's I think between zero and Gangnam Style, there's a gulf of difference. But I think the Gangnam Style example works better over here. So, you're saying China is the Gangnam Style
Very much.
YouTube that is the world.
Yeah.
Okay, so where do we start? Okay, from sheer political. So, 2019 was supposed to be the year when China really just became more. I've already used the word hegemonical on this podcast before, but that's exactly what they were supposed to be. But somehow the allure has sort of blurred a little bit. I think more of their atrocities are being seen around the world. The economy is slowing, which is a big thing. So, the rails are slightly coming off also because the Hong Kong protests have taken a huge, huge hit on the image of China around the world. And maybe this type of authoritarian government isn't. For a long time, I always thought China was still doing all these atrocities, but it was covered over by the gloss of its growing, tech sector, or companies are being lifted, or huge populations are being lifted out of poverty, which still is to its credit. And it was doing a lot of work on climate change, which it is. Again, Beijing has gone from being one of the most polluted countries in the world. It's still polluted, but it's gone down that ranking a fair bit. And I feel like since many of those have had their sheens taken off, this sort of like the underlying crap is becoming more and more apparent. One thing that China has been doing in the last couple of years is what is called infrastructure diplomacy, where with the Belt and Road Initiative, they're trying to basically put ports of their own in various other countries around the world to have a sort of like a Chinese web around the world, pretty much, as it were, physical web, as it were. And most of these tend to be in poor countries in Africa, Southeast Asia, and Europe, and with authoritarian governments. So it becomes easy for them to bribe or whatever it is and to get their way. And what ends up happening is all these countries end up becoming either complicit in what China is doing or become conduits. Like, for example, its port in southern Pakistan is pretty much a conduit for it to get oil very easily from the Gulf and cheaply, so it doesn't have to pay taxes or whatever it is. So they're just shoving their way into...
It's like economic communism, effectively. Yeah, like the satellite states, right? Like as USSR in with an economic sphere of influence.
I mean, as critical as I am of the current government that we have, I think that's the one thing that they have actually done well, which is to stay out of the BRI and actually stand up to China. I mean, there are lots of voices that are, even recently there was a pan-Asia sort of a free trade zone, right, from China, which China was spearheading all the way down to Australia and all that. And I personally think India did the right thing by stepping out of that. That would have been a disaster for our farmers. But that's underlying several other problems India has. But for the moment, I suppose it is the right thing. The other thing, moving away from all that in China, is how they have pioneered tech, but to spy on their own citizens.
Yeah. Oh,
like,
my God.
You take any technology, okay, and you're like, oh yeah, China's doing a great job of that. And then you see use cases like, facial recognition.
Facial recognition to kind of moving the entire... So what, coming to the advertising language of it, like the customer journey, so to speak. Like the customer journey is no longer just a journey that the customer takes to take a particular product or just buy a particular product. It's the life of the person. So from there, exactly as one of my colleagues who spent some time in China was saying, that for the person to purchase a particular, so go to a particular restaurant, they have a conversation, they will start by getting a thought and having a conversation with their friends on WeChat, then booking the restaurant on WeChat, finding where the restaurant is on WeChat, turning up to the restaurant, placing the order on WeChat, getting their food and getting notified that the food is at the counter on WeChat, to finally leaving a review for the place on WeChat and then sharing what the place is also on WeChat. So the entire ecosystem of anything that would be to do with the decision of going to the restaurant lives on WeChat. The government has access to all of this data from end to end, and not just the specific singular data, but the big data as well around it, which is how many people are taking a particular decision and what is the user flow. So they are getting all of these points. And the second part being, the government not only having control of this data, and people are not doing this just out of convenience, but doing this now, they are now compelled to do this because there are now stores increasingly coming up in China, especially in urban areas, which do not accept cash anymore.
Sure.
They do not accept cash. They in fact, at least need you to log on to your WeChat for something or the other. So WeChat is now increasingly being used by official governmental systems. So it's mandated that you have to use WeChat in some places to get basic services. So
in China, you can't hate on big tech even if you want to.
Yeah, you can't. You have
by law.
You're legally required to do these things. So it's become that overpowering presence that not only do you opt in, but you are now pushed in almost.
Wow. That's okay.
Big silence.
It just took a moment for that. For that to sink in. What is the other big thing about China is... I think one story that's become very apparent is like something that you touched upon in a previous episode, which is how Western companies have to kowtow to China.
Yeah, very much.
And this has become more apparent.
Ideology versus economics.
Yeah, ideology versus economy. And it's become all the more apparent as there are political problems happening in Hong Kong and Taiwan. So a lot of companies, especially travel companies, have to modify their the drop-down list to exclude Taiwan, and that's supposedly a part of China, for instance. So that's, you know, examples like these. But I don't know. I mean, as the economy is stuttering and the sheen is coming off a little bit, and Western countries are becoming more and more aware of what the atrocities are that China is conducting, especially with those Uyghurs, which we forgot totally to touch upon. I wish the
Chinese government did also the same.
I think companies will grow spines slowly, and I see a large part of the US, for instance, boycotting some brands because they choose to do work with the US. It might still be very far-fetched, but at least it's one step in
this
that
reminds
direction.
Me, just before I left, an uncle who came to my house randomly knocked and said, gave me a flyer and said, sir, sare Chinese product use karna band karo. And I'm like, uncle, aapka scooter kaun sa hai?
And it starts from there, right?
Yeah, dekh lo.
Yeah, fair enough, it starts from there.
So, yeah.
But yeah, the big Chinese thing over the last year, the big thing that's happening there is their treatment of the Uyghurs, which they join in many, many countries in the region that creates that... commits atrocities against his resident Muslims, where they now detain them in camps in northern China in an area called Xinjiang, if I'm pronouncing that right. And yeah, I mean, there are lots of atrocities over there which China says, no, they're just going through whatever. So they use some euphemism like cultural, whatever.
But re-education.
Re-education. Re-education. That's what it's called, right? So yeah, it's been an interesting year for China, one where they're trying to be the bully, but the sheen is being taken off a little bit. It's going to be interesting to see what they do in 2020.
When was it, this year or last year, that China banned Winnie the Pooh?
No, I think that was in 2017 or 18. Okay. That happened a while back. Yeah.
Oh, man. No, but this is why, right? I mean, you want to be a world leader, prepare, be ready for the scrutiny.
Yeah. But one thing about China is, I think they were a country that tried to isolate themselves and be, you know, just, you know, but at the same time do all this infrastructure. So it's all going outside. But one good thing that Trump has done with the whole trade war, unnecessary as that might be, is to show that how if you cut it off, China itself suffers. Because once a trade war happened, what happens is both US and China suffer. It's possible, like, and a lot of people are saying, oh, if they cut it off, then US will suffer, China will continue to grow. It didn't. Yeah. It suffered a lot as a result of it, which kind of goes to show that, you know, in today's day and age, if you don't do that, then, you know, you will suffer no matter how much of an authoritarian government that you have. And I feel that the same thing will happen to Saudi Arabia eventually.
Wow, once Trump did something good. This is like that infinite monkey theorem. No, eventually he will write the Bible.
No, so in the last 10 minutes, I have said that Trump did something good and I support something that the BJP did. I think we should move on to another topic.
That's our attempt to be fair and balanced.
Yeah, this is what China does to you.
Yeah. And so the next topic that we have out of the hat is...
Oh, this is a happy one. The all-female cabinet in Finland.
Ah. Oh, fantastic.
Superb. So, interestingly...
Was it all-female cabinet to discuss men's rights issues? It would have been that way.
That would have been particularly poetic. Yeah.
Yeah, but you know, the country that has the maximum female representation in parliament is Rwanda.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But do you know why that is? Because of the genocide where most of the men were killed. So, like, the only, like, ones left were women. So, that was the depressing state of affairs till, you know, this piece of news came into being. And the good thing here is that it's not a...
Depressing state of affairs is also depressing affairs of the state, if you will.
Superb.
Okay,
superb,
sorry,
superb.
Sorry. Yeah. Not superb at all. Please move on.
Okay. So the interesting and good thing here is that this is a actual victory of their systems and processes.
And they now have the youngest PM, right? Yeah. That's the cabinet, right?
Yeah, she's 34. I don't know if she's the youngest. I mean, unless Tejasvi Surya becomes the prime minister.
Yeah, no, she is the youngest female prime minister and 34 years Sana Marin.
Really? Didn't China have an emperor when he was 4 or something? Like somebody got killed.
I really doubt that's elected. I think elected prime ministers are what we are going for over here.
I think at this point, electing a 4-year-old may not be a bad thing.
I think the US is way ahead of everyone.
So yeah, anyway, the good thing about Finland is this has all been systemic. Yeah. It's not a one-off and it will be repeated over and over again because as they were the first country in Europe to give women the right to vote in 1906.
Oh, wow.
And allowed women to stand as candidates in the same year. And basically, all of this has been brought about by their, you know, in some senses, lack of patriarchy in the sense that, you know, there are no specific gender roles. Men look after children they're supposed to.
Yeah, equal maternity leave.
Basically, genderless parental leave policies and everyone has work-life balance and things like that. But it's a really heartening sort of news to end the year when in the cabinet again there are three other women who are under 40 who are part of
the entire cabinet is 10 women and 5 men. That's it. Wow. So it's like someone was saying
that's a parliament.
Yeah.
15 people.
Yeah. It's 15 people. That's the whole cabinet. The cabinet, the ruling cabinet, right? The ruling cabinet is 10 women and 5 men. I'm looking at that picture right now, and there's a top Twitter comment was Finland's new cabinet, 10 women, 5 men. One day it won't be remarkable. And posting that, except the fact that when I was looking at it, it's all 10 white people, 15 white people. So that being another point of lack of diversity as well.
Yeah. But it's Finland.
Anyway, so I'm assuming they barely have any black people.
I mean, but knowing Scandinavia, they'll take this to heart and they'll start taking animals and all that. Soon you'll have like, oh, now we can't have like 15 humans.
Yeah.
You'll have like, representation of bears and everything or whatever.
Yeah, gender balance is important. Yeah.
They'll get fish and they'll really be Finland if they get fish on the.
Oh my God.
I think we jumped the shark.
That's the
economies of scale.
Let's
get trout off this mess that we have got ourselves into.
Yeah.
Are we any more?
The interesting thing about this is again that it's a coalition of five parties, all of which are headed by women. So, you know, coalitions work. Sometimes you don't need strong men to run.
Or strong persons in this case. Okay. Just to be strong gender. People. Just to be gender neutral.
Sure. They are strong.
Stronger together.
Yeah. Okay.
that suffered badly. But anyway. And finally.
You know why Finland is so such heaven? Because they're Helsinki.
Oh my God.
No. I reject that comment.
Okay, cool.
Yes.
Moving ahead.
Abbas, if you have not edited that out, I will see you later.
I thought it was clever.
Okay. And our final topic for this episode is...
That's roughly is all fixed up. I think we've all chosen our topics before. This is like... IAS appointments, how it happens.
Is actually... this is an interesting... It's not as much a topic, but a discussion point, which is... The lure of perfect narratives. And honestly, it actually comes from also... So, it segues nicely from the...
The script of Minority Report. Come.
Wait. This lure of perfect narrative is not something people can accuse Simplified of aspiring for.
Hey, you're a guest on the show. Don't.
I'm talking about this episode.
Okay.
Oh, suddenly.
Too much he's putting in.
Explain this.
Anyway,
actually.
So this actually segues well from the previous topic that you were talking about where, yes, the narrative currently is that there are 12 women on the cabinet and 10 women on the cabinet and it's progressive, but again there is a lack of representation across or what the issues are. So it's just this, that as a species we are very as a social species in today's day and age, it's very easy to form and follow a narrative. It's good to have a clean villain, a clean hero, and therefore follow that particular story. But as in case, like for example with Trump, so you know that okay, Trump is the villain, the Democrats are the hero, and this is how we do it. But the reality of the situation is that there are no perfect narratives.
Yeah.
There are Democrats who are corrupt, who are doing negative things. There are things that Trump is doing which is positive and good for his people.
Yeah. Just China itself for that matter. There are a lot of things that they might be doing right which are
positive. And it's true of the government here as well in its own way, which is representative of the people that we are right now. And this is being, at the risk of again being three guys who are discussing this topic, was demonstrated in the best way in the recent developments with the Me Too campaign. So where we one thing that we realized, and not getting into what the controversy and who's right or who's wrong is, what we realized, the one thing that we definitely realized, that the simple straightforward narrative of saying that there is a victim and there is a perpetrator and this particular thing happened in a certain way and there are no ambiguities about it,
there's no
was
nuance.
Kind of brought into question, where we realized that there were nuances. It is a messy thing. There are no perfect people and people have their own dark sides and people do things with different motivations. Or that certain victims are not completely blameless and perpetrators are not completely to blame. So I think with that particular thing, I think the only point that we should really take away from this is not to question the movements,
yeah.
but to understand that narratives, the way they are being constructed, are being constructed because they are for a reason.
Yeah.
And they need to be questioned, and it's okay to have multiple narratives to tell a particular story.
So basically how narratives versus things happen, I think the analogy is like an Instagram story versus your real life.
Exactly, yeah.
Because it's curated for a certain
The story is frozen for that one laugh, but the fight that happened before or the argument that will follow is not captured in that. So I think that is where the narrative needs to be.
You're well into your 1 year of marriage.
and the examples around the world are so stark, right? You and I are discussing the perfect example of this is Canada, for instance.
Yeah.
Especially because stark contrast Trudeau, to its southern neighbor. You always think of this Canada as this utopia which has beautiful landscapes and progressive policies, now has weed across the country and you know all those things, plus they have Bryan Adams and Rush to count
Brett
that.
The Hitman Hart
Hart also, and Cameron Diaz. Okay, let's read this
list of Canadians.
This is a fjord that we will go down.
They also have Nickelback, let's be clear.
But Nickelback are good, and I will have an argument with you on that later. I refuse to give in to this Nickelback hatred, which seems to be... Anyway, the point that I'm trying to make over here, like Trudeau, for instance, he was supposed to be the face, like literally the face of, you know, this progressive Canada, good-looking guy who hikes along with you randomly. Yeah.
Welcomes refugees at the airport.
All that.
Wears fun socks.
Yeah. Oh, is that from... Oh, I knew. Like,
this is Trump on hot mics.
Yeah, and then suddenly news of him, you know... So there are two news parts of this. One is, of course, that whole blackface incident that happened where he did slightly racist-ish things in the past, which is one, which is personal history. And then there's the Canadian story, which despite its, all the progressive whatever thing it's doing, is actually... still supplying a lot of oil to the rest of the world in manners that are not exactly extremely ethical.
Exactly.
So there are issues that's happening over there. There are a lot of stories of racism, etc., happening within Canada itself. Not all Canadians are as inviting as we might make it out to be in our narrative.
Very much so.
Yeah. So
honestly, there is another analysis piece that I had read about how Justin Trudeau's speeches and the actions that he does are extremely PR specific.
He
knows, like, for example, he was giving a talk about explaining how fusion or nuclear fission works.
Yeah, yeah.
And there was an analysis of how he's waiting for punchlines and he's waiting to show off so that he can get that PR soundbite.
Yeah, yeah.
So being aware of the fact that we live in this post-truth world, I think we should be particularly wary in choosing our heroes, or at least be accepting of the fact that tomorrow, if our hero does turn out to be flawed, it does not mean our value system completely breaks down.
Yeah, yeah. But so, on the positive, just one thing. On the positive side of that, however, is when there is some bad shit that's happening, it's also likely that there's some interesting things that happen out of that. Like, I've read very heartwarming stories coming out of Syria, for instance.
Yeah.
Right? It could be one family, one app that was developed, or communities, you know, whatever it is. Like, even in places like Afghanistan, for that matter.
Yeah.
There are those good stories if you want to dig for them. I think the takeaway for me is just learn to be a little cynical about these about life in general, I suppose. Like, I don't trust Shriketh, for instance.
Thanks. Like, very comforting.
But also I think Obama made this point earlier in the year, right? On call out culture, where he basically said that's not activism, and the idea of purity and you're never compromised and you're always politically woke and all that stuff, you should get over that quickly. The world is messy. There are ambiguities. People who do really good stuff have flaws. People who are fighting, who you are fighting, may love their kids and share certain things with you. So
exactly.
So judge each ball on its merit, basically.
And also, there's an important point that the important point that you raised about how... woke culture needs an inquisition of itself, where there is, like, apparently this trophy of wokeness that you have reached people seem to, like, then afterwards look down on everyone else who's not as woke.
I think in some senses we are all guilty of
it's just saying that looking down on someone else who's like, oh my god, how primitive.
This is a problem that I've faced kind of like with the whole wave of protests that's happening in the country right now. It's a time when people who've never been in a protest before are now feeling compelled to go for a protest,
exactly.
Right? And I'm a perfect example of this. Despite all my newsletter writing and simplified rambling, I've never been on ground for one of these. But this was something that I felt like I needed to go for.
No, I think you used a great analogy in one of the posts that you had written about what if a band, or I think someone else probably wrote it. What if a Bandra boy is asking for sunscreen to go for the protest?
Exactly. What's the problem in that?
What's the problem in that?
The intent? And I've seen many of the guys who have done activism in the past on my timeline. They're saying, oh, look who's like suddenly coming to protest now. And to me, that's like a bad way of going about it. Like some guy commented on that very same post saying, oh, how cute of you.
Yeah.
And then no, it's not about cute. Like everybody wakes up at different points of time. Sure, you're great that you've done that long before that we ever have. But the point is, like, if we are fighting this good fight, we can't do it by, like, pushing each other down. Like, tell us what we are doing wrong, because the Bandra boy is a perfect example. And we have these questions, right? When I went to my first protest, I thought, okay, do I need to stay here for an entire hour, or can I come back, like, or
leave and come back?
Or, you know, or whatever it is. It might be selfish. There might be people, oh, you want to go back and watch on Netflix. Let them know. At least coming for 5-10 minutes means...
And movements are formed by people of different motivations. Yeah. It's not like everyone needs to be a Bhagat Singh to make a movement, right?
Exactly. Especially in this day and age.
You have people who are There are leaders and there are followers.
Yeah,
and leaders wouldn't be leaders without followers. So you need people who will follow at different motivations.
Yeah, so this upvoking should not happen.
Upvoking is
how do we get here?
I think it was a perfect narrative.
It was a New Yorker cartoon. I'm not sure if it is one. Basically, it said, how dare you not know about this thing I learned 30 minutes ago.
Yeah, very true. So that's exactly how this outwoking is a big problem.
Yeah. In any case, we hope you have learned something over the last
hour
or so, which you can now use to show off. If somebody says, how dare you not know this thing that I learned about one podcast episode ago, please pass this episode on to them.
That's it for
this. We have no idea how many more
this edition,
we're going to do. For all you know, we'll end up going all the way to 2020.
Well, it's also the end of a decade, so I think
true.
We should do end of decade episodes. Also.
We didn't prep for 2019, Chuck. I think the decade's a bitch much. But that's it for this particular edition of our year end recaps. We'll be back with I'm assuming let's see what happens bracket may few
let's see episode, what we feel like
episode of Simplified. So till then, stay tuned and
stay integrated
stay tuned, stay woke aspirational and stay simplified. Bye bye.
Thank you for coming on the show again, Tony.
Bye.